three levels of government, municipally, provincially, and federally. In recent years, he's been known more for his participation on the provincial scene. Elected to the Legislative Assembly of British Columbia as the MLA for North Vancouver Lonsdale from 1991 to 1996. He served as a special advisor to two NDP premiers, Glenn Clark and Ujjal Desange. More recently, you've probably encountered him as a talking head on radio, television, and print, waxing political punditry on the goings-on in Victoria and beyond. You can hear him weekly on CFAX and on 600 AM with Rafe Mayer. David Schreck publishes his own website, strategicthoughts.com, a repository of his columns, research, and political activism, of which Vaughn Palmer once wrote, quote, Schreck's extensive research and biting observations are having an influence on news coverage. Welcome to the commentary.ca, David Schreck. Good afternoon, Dr. Schreck.
Good afternoon.
The latest, first of all, thanks for doing this. The latest poll that I have is the Mustel poll from July. Has there been a more recent poll than that, or?
No, there is an August poll where Mustel put the NDP and Libs neck and neck. I stand to be corrected, but I think it was 41 NDP, 40 Liberal.
So how strong do you think that'll last until May of 2005?
Well, I think Mustel's polling in June and July was overly optimistic for the NDP. I think it was biased by the federal election. And what you really have to do is look at the polling for the last 6 months or so. And with the exception of Mustel's June-July polls that showed anywhere from 9 to 12 point lead for the NDP, most of the rest of the polls over the last six-month period have shown the Libs and the NDP running neck-and-neck races around the 40% level. And I think that will probably hold up to and into the election.
So the Liberals losing the election is not a possibility, do you think? Or?
Well, it's possible. One has to be realistic. I mean, in all of the history of British Columbia, the NDP has won three general elections. The best in history it got by way of percentage of the popular vote was in the I think it was early 80s or late 70s, 46%, and it lost that year. And the years when it has won when there have been three or four-way splits in the vote. So I think based on all historical precedents, not to mention that winning in 2005 would be a complete turnaround from a near-death experience, a betting person would say the odds are against the NDP forming the government in 2005. Notwithstanding that, times are different than, you know, you can't steer by looking in the rearview mirror. Times are different than they ever have been in the past, and that we have an incredibly unpopular premier in the form of Gordon Campbell. And Campbell is doing more to organize for the NDP than any new Democrat ever could. He's broken promise after promise. He's dismantled many of the institutions that were really established by W.A.C. Bennett. And his record on everything from expanded gambling to cutting funding for child welfare services is the exact opposite of what he promised to do, not to mention little tricks like selling B.C. Rail when he said he wouldn't, or dismantling the control structure of B.C. Ferries, having ships built offshore. Now people are worried about what's going to happen to ICBC, given that they've given the boot to Nick Geer, who, much to their amazement, became a champion for the corporation and protected it while he was there.
So Carol James, she's sort of benefiting from Gordon Campbell's unpopularity. The NDP could have, as Rafe Mayer likes to say, a fence post with hair running, and they would do as well.
Well, I don't think remarks like that should be taken to be derogatory of the effort that Carol has put in. It's no small effort to win an NDP convention in a contested fight as she did, and whoever the leader of the NDP is, they would have difficulty attracting daily media coverage. The government that controls the agenda in terms of being able to make announcements, the best the opposition can do is offer informed criticism and occasionally snag a comment. So,
has she been effective, though? Because Joy McPhail's been the front person for this most of the time because, you know, she is in the House. Has Carol James been an effective leader of the NDP?
Well, one cannot question the fact that the turnaround in the polls and the NDP becoming competitive with the virtually tied within the margin of error, sometimes up a point, sometimes down a point relative to the Liberals, has all happened since Carroll became leader. Carroll became leader in November. It was in February that the polls started to put the NDP and the Liberals in a neck-and-neck race. So Carroll brought the advantage, and I'm a great supporter of Joy McPhail. I think she's absolutely brilliant, and I think the work that she's put in the last 3 years, no ordinary human being could begin to match. She certainly held the NDP ground and made the NDP respectable in terms of a two-person opposition doing the work of 30 or 40. But Carroll took the party the next step in terms of separating some of the mistakes of the past from the rejuvenated, renewed NDP, and she deserves full credit for that.
The Green Party and Adrian Carr, does that play a part in any of this?
Well,
in the next election?
I go back to the fact that the three times the NDP formed government, 75, 91, and 96, it did so with split votes. The Green Party might play a role. Now, current polling has them stalled around 10%. At the areas where they are strongest, the NDP is also strongest. So the likelihood of the Green Party being able to win a seat is somewhere between slim and none. They could play a role as spoiler, and clearly in 2001, they did that in a half dozen or so seats where had the vote that went to the Greens gone to the NDP would have elected a larger caucus. When people say that, however, I always point out that if pigs had wings, they'd fly, unless, of course, they were like a penguin. You cannot presume that you can add the two columns of numbers together.
We see that with the conservatives now, with the Tory and the Alliance
precisely,
vote.
Tory and Alliance vote didn't total anywhere close to what were in the two columns. And you look at a guy like Rafe Mayer, who advocated in the last federal election voting green, certainly said he was going to vote green himself, and I expect him to do the same thing in the next provincial election. He wouldn't vote NDP if hell had frozen over. I mean, under no circumstances would Rafe vote NDP, but he will vote green. There are probably other people like him who come from the center-right to right side of the spectrum who want to cast a protest vote and will vote green. So it is by no means correct to presume that the green vote is otherwise an NDP vote. Every vote lost hurts, but if the Libs lose a vote for every vote the NDP loses, it all comes out in the wash.
His latest book, I don't know if you've seen it yet, says that he comes out as a socialist.
I think Rafe is a great broadcaster and has contributed a lot. I don't think I'd call him a socialist.
The Carol James, back to her for a sec here. We've heard Tim Stevenson, the Vancouver City Councillor, he's intending to seek the nomination in Vancouver Burrard. Harry Lawley's expressed interest as well in running in his old riding. Adrian Dix has been courted to run in Vancouver Kingsway. We've heard Ian Waddell's name floated, even Sven Robinson. This sort of old guard coming back, will that...
I'm fairly confident that Adrian will not run. I've had a chat with him via email. He's not closed the door yet, but he recognizes that there are some major hurdles, and I'm certain that Sven and Waddell will not run. However, I think there could be anywhere from 8 to 12 former NDP MLAs seeking nominations. Now, just because you seek a nomination doesn't mean you're going to win a nomination, and just because you get a nomination doesn't mean you're going to be elected, and even if you're elected doesn't mean you're going to do anything unless the leader assigns you a meaningful role within the caucus. So I would say that of 79 candidates in the next election in the 79 constituencies around the province, there'll probably be about 10% that will have some experience as an MLA, former MLAs. The Liberals would try to characterize that as the old guard controlling the party. Anybody with a brain in their head will know that it's 10% of the candidates, and even if the NDP takes 40 or 50 seats, which is the most optimistic possible, the former MLAs would make up at most 20 to 25% of the caucus. So it is factually incorrect to say that the old guard will be playing a dominant role. Well, that won't stop Gamble and Company from saying so. They want to run against Glenn Clark. They don't want to run against Gerald James.
Before the election in May, there's Surrey Panorama Ridge. Is that that seems to be sort of an NDP seat? It has been traditionally, hasn't it?
Well, it's a brand new riding, and nobody knows for sure. It was carved out of the old ridings, I think it was part of Surrey Green Timbers, but I'm not certain off the top of my head in terms of the boundaries. But it's brand new. Nobody knows for sure. If you look at how the vote in that riding went in 2001, they all went overwhelmingly Campbell, but in terms of the percentage of the vote for the Liberals, it was in about the middle of the pack. I understand that current polling shows that the NDP is very competitive there. We don't know who the Liberal candidate will be. We know that the ultra-conservative chair of the Surrey School Board, who championed the homophobic cause of keeping the books out of the schools.
That's Mary Pollock, is it?
Right. Is seeking the nomination for the Liberals. She will both act as a lightning rod for some people and be some people's heroes. So I don't think it's going to be possible to generalize from that by-election to anything else, and Lord knows when the by-election will be called. Campbell should call it any day now.
I was on the elections BC side, and it said that it had to be called by the end of November, I believe.
Well, he has to call it within 6 months of the resignation having been submitted, so that would put it at the end of November. Now, if it isn't held till then, the person that would put the person being elected around Christmas, and the general election is in May, the House will only sit for a month or two in February and March. It would be a disgrace. Campbell should call the by-election now so that the winner can take his or her seat in the October sitting of the legislature. He may be scared to call it, one, because he doesn't want to face the potential of a by-election defeat, and two, he doesn't want to have this, or maybe he does want to have, one way or the other, the possibility of having a rather controversial candidate representing his cause isn't going to help him either.
The story that came out on Monday was that the Campbell government was using private clinics for public care. Now, I'm not up to date on this. Are they talking to private clinics, or are they...
No, they've actually contracted with private clinics...
They've cut a deal?
...to do surgeries for people currently on various wait lists. They have indicated that there will be more such contracting. Now, Global TV had a piece last evening, that would have been August 24th, where they had a clip from Colin Hanson, Minister of Health, in a previous time, saying that they would never do such a thing. So he's done a 180-degree flip-flop. I will be posting to my website later today various references from the literature that refer to 131 studies, all of which show that not-for-profit health care is more cost-effective and efficient than for-profit clinics. It appears that this is another ideologically driven step by the Campbell government to shift work from public hospitals, where they have the option of opening closed beds and opening closed operating rooms, and instead going to privatized clinics. I don't think that there's anything that supports that objectively as being either effective or efficient.
Is this opening the sort of getting into privatization by the back door then by the Campbell government?
Well, it's definitely privatization, but what makes it particular, and it's certainly union busting in that sense, but what makes it dangerous, and the NDP deserves some criticism for this too. Under the NDP, ICBC and WCB started using clinics like that to jump the queue for some of their patients. Now we see patients where the bill is paid by MSP, normal Medicare, being referred to those clinics. That provides an economic base for the clinics, which also, it's widely known, are taking private paying patients, which pay out of their pocket for jumping the queue. And that violates the principle of access to care based on need rather than the thickness of the wallet. So for a variety of points of view, both undermining the fundamental principles of access to health care based on need rather than a dollar amount, but also from a hard-nosed economic point of view in terms of using the most efficient clinic with when it's paid for with public dollars, it's a wrong thing to do. It appears to be ideologically driven.
Of course, your former colleague, the federal minister of health, has promised to stem the tide of privatization, hasn't he?
Well, he promised to stem the tide of privatization, but then he did an interview with Rafe Mayer, where Rafe elaborated on what do you mean by stem, and it turns out it was a meaningless term, and he intends to do absolutely nothing about stopping privatization. You cannot expect the federal government to use the Canada Health Act or anything else to interfere with provinces allowing private surgery centers.
Let's talk about him for a sec here. You advised him to call an early election when he was the premier, but that was ignored. You advised him not to seek the federal Liberal nomination because doing so would bring disrepute and ridicule to himself and the NDP. He ignored that advice. He doesn't call on you anymore, does he?
Since I resigned from his office which was before the 2001 election, I resigned in January. First week of January, we've spoken to each other twice, and neither were arranged occasions. They were when we ran into each other at a memorial service for a mutual friend, and I ran into him at the AM 600 studio. Ujjal didn't return my phone calls when I tried to contact him to dissuade him for running for the federal Liberals. And he certainly didn't listen to my advice when I said that he should be calling the election rather than running off on a junket. But in retrospect, he may have wanted to go on that junket in order to, and that was the...
That was the India trip, right?
The India trip was immediately followed by a trip to China as part of Team Canada. And Ujjal should have been staying behind he's a lousy public speaker, and we encouraged him to stay behind and prepare for the election that had to be called shortly. Instead, he went from the India trip to the Team Canada-China trip, I suspect largely for the purpose of lobbying the Prime Minister for the kind of position that he has now.
Like a Senate seat or something like that?
Well,
I've heard you say that.
I think it was a Senate seat then, and I think it turned into when Paul Martin became Prime Minister, I think Martin played hardball and said, if you want anything from us, you have to put up, and hence he had to stand for MP.
A couple of other things before I let you go here. The Citizens Assembly, they're meeting in early September. Has that been an effective or useful study of how we are possibly changing the system?
Well, time will tell. It's certainly a unique experiment. I think political scientists will be studying it and writing about it for decades to come. I think the average British Columbian has paid little or no attention. If you go to the Citizens Assembly website and look at the number of people who visit it, for instance, and they post that number on there, more people visit my website. Even though the Citizens Assembly website has a wealth of information for anybody who's interested in the topic of electoral reform, they've got the transcripts of all of their various meetings, all of the resource materials all of the submissions that have been made to the Assembly, it's all up there for anybody who wants to do research or read about the subject. I think most people are waiting, if they remember it's going on at all, are waiting to see what the recommendation is. And I think once that recommendation comes forward, it's likely to receive some public debate. It'll be interesting to see. I don't think it's going to. At one time, I thought it would go through like the referendum we had on initiative and recall. I no longer think that. I think that it's going to be a little more controversial than that, and whatever their recommendation is, it may have difficulty getting through the double majority hurdle. That's
the 60%, is it?
60% plus 60% of the constituencies. So if the system's going to be changed, it's going to have to be a recommendation that is overwhelmingly popular, and I'm not sure if either mixed member proportionate representation or some form of single transferable ballot, as was used in 1952, is going to get that kind of widespread support. Time will tell.
Now, there were 9 presentations made, I believe, and then 8 of the 9 were for some wholesale change. Only one of them advocated for the status quo. Do you think that the commission, the assembly, will recommend significant change or wholesale change?
Well, there were hundreds of presentations made, and what they then did was take 9 or thereabouts to present to the entire assembly in a second round of presentations to highlight some of the issues. I don't know whether the ones they chose in any way reflect how the commission will split in terms of what they will support, or whether that was just the academic work by their research advisor who picked some of the best presentations in terms of the range of opinion that's out there. I don't think you can read anything into how the submissions balance versus which way the commission will go.
The threshold that was set by the Campbell government, was it not? That was too high?
It's not an unreasonable threshold when you're making such fundamental change if, for instance, we went to mixed-member proportionate representation, the sense of having your own MLA would virtually disappear for many of the interior and northern ridings. It would be an almost impossible job for an MLA to service some of the northern ridings and get around to all the communities.
You were, I remember when Gordon Campbell had his little incident in Maui, you were saying that he would probably not last until May 2005, and you put out a bet. Did anyone take that bet? Or?
No one did, thank God, because it looks like he's going to hang in there. And it looks like he will continue to be a liability for his party. And it's interesting, immediately after the Maui Waui escapade, where he got picked up for more than twice the legal limit in drunk driving, his popularity increased. But while there was a bounce back from that, I think that it will come back to haunt him at the time of the election, because certainly the gender gap is widening. He has a terrible problem with women. And I think that in general, when people are mad at him about one issue or another, it's also going to be back in the back of their mind that this was a guy who had trouble personally on the job and isn't necessarily the guy they want to have around for a second term.
So it doesn't look like a person who could succeed him. I mean, I don't see it. Christy Clark, Terry Collins.
The biggest advantage he has in hanging on to power is no one immediately as the heir apparent.
That's true. Strategicthoughts.com, I go to the site all the time. I think it's a valuable site, whether you're left-wing, you're right-wing, or you're indifferent.
Thank you.
The research that you do, I think, is important, and I think if you want to be an informed voter in this next year, in this election year, that you should, you know, whatever you may think, you're not going to change anybody's mind, but I think, people should go there because do your research.
It's the miracle of the hyperlink. I enjoy researching the articles I write. They are not exercises in polemics. They are thought out and researched, and they use hyperlinks to tie into the original sources that support the various points. So on any topic, whether you agree with my point of view or not, the hyperlinks that are embedded in many of the articles provide the range of resource material on the topic.
Is that what you're going to do in the run-up to the election, to be a commentator?
I'll never run again for elected office. I really enjoy the research I do and the punditry, and I will keep at that.
Strategicthoughts.com, that's the link there. Thank you very much for doing this. We appreciate you taking the time to speak with me, and we hope to call on you again as the election year progresses.
Thank you, Ryan.
And before I let you go, one more thing. How many seats do you think the NDP will get, the Liberals will get? Do you think the Greens will elect anyone?
The Greens will elect no one. It'll be just BC Liberals and NDP. The NDP will elect a minimum of 20, and they could elect 40 Now, 40 is the magic number. There are 79 seats in the legislature, so 40 makes you government. So I would say the range is in there 20 to upwards of 40 or low 40s.
Thanks again for joining us, David.
Okay, thank you.
David Schreck's website is strategicthoughts.com. This segment was produced by yours truly with Richie Leung and Vishal Durr. For the commentary, I'm Joseph Plana.